righteousness. Then, just maybe then, his kingdom will come. His will be done.
You've been listening to Viewpoint with Chuck Crismeyer. Viewpoint is supported by the faithful gifts of our listeners. Let me urge you to become a partner with Chuck as a voice to the church declaring vision for the nation. Join us again next time on Viewpoint as we confront the issues of America's heart and home.
Well, this is Dr. Stan here at Radio Liberty, coming from the hills overlooking beautiful and picturesque Monterey Bay and bringing you the news behind the news, the story behind the story, hoping to convince you that reality is usually scoffed at, that illusion is usually king, but in the battle for survival of Western civilization, it's going to be reality and not illusion or delusion that's going to determine what the future will bring. And I need to remind you the views expressed here are not necessarily those of the owners, management, staff, sponsors, or supporters of the station you're listening to. They happen to be my views. And, well, for the next hour, they're going to be the views of our good friend Dr. Russell Blaylock, who's a retired neurosurgeon who spends full time researching health and health issues. He's written some wonderful books, which we carry. But, of course, really I look to for suggestions and understanding of so many of the health issues today, because so much of what we think we know about health just isn't true. And so many things that we're doing, so many things that the government is requiring, like compulsory vaccinations, flu vaccinations, trying to get everybody to take a flu shot, and we can get our flu shots at the local pharmacy. And of course, the healthcare workers are threatened with the loss of their jobs if they don't take the flu shots. And yet, these have mercury in them. And mercury, there is no safe dose of mercury. So why are they insisting that people take flu shots that contain mercury in them when they stop giving the vaccines, childhood vaccines that contain mercury to our children? They stopped the use of vaccines that contain mercury in with the childhood vaccines. Of course, and they did mandate that the children go ahead and get a flu shot that had mercury in it, so that by the time they're 21, they'll have far more mercury in it than they would have taking the childhood vaccines. Well, Dr. Blaylock, what are we going to talk about tonight?
I thought we'd talk about the new study that came out on dangers of GMO corn.
Okay, I think that's a great subject, so you go right ahead.
Yes, what we've had is a number of studies that have indicated there's a problem with the GMO foods, and of course the idea of the GMO foods was to accomplish several things by genetic engineering of plants, edible plants.
And Russell, are you on a regular hard line telephone? You're a little soft there.
Yes.
Oh, well, just please go ahead and speak up just a little bit louder, please.
Okay. What they were intent on doing is some genetic engineering of edible plants so that the plants would produce high levels of natural plant pesticides. Plants produce their own pesticides when they're attacked by viruses or fungi or insects. But this would make the plant produce at much higher levels of different types of these natural pesticides. It also could change the protein content of the food. So it theoretically on the drawing table, it sounded quite exciting, but unfortunately, when they started looking at the research, they began to see some problems. For instance, one of the early things that happened is they grew some or engineered some celery to make this plant toxic. And what the workers noticed when they were plucking and picking the celery, it was burning their hands. And some of the workers had eaten some of the celery, and it burned severely inside of their mouth. So they realized that they had to quickly destroy that crop before it ever enters the market. So that was the early experience with this genetic engineering. The next group of crops included primarily soybeans and corn. They also did cotton They did potatoes. They've done squash. They've done a number of vegetables, tomatoes. The main one is, main two is soybeans and corn, which is something like 85% of the corn in the United States is genetically modified, and something like 90% or 95% of soy is genetically modified.
Hold that thought. We're going to be back here in just a moment with Russell Blaylock talking about genetically modified food. To Stan, our guest is Dr. Russell Blaylock. We're talking about genetically modified food. Of course, most of it's produced by Monsanto, and most of the experiments that have been done by Monsanto to say that the foods are safe. Now, the initial results with the initial genetically modified food, the initial studies with potatoes were a disaster. The initial studies with certainly celery were a disaster, and there were serious questions about many of the genetically modified food. Well, today, most of the corn and most of the soybeans produced in America is genetically modified, not the products in Europe. The Europeans certainly are not using genetically modified food. The Africans will not use it because of the concern over the studies that have shown problems with it, but Monsanto insists there's no problem with it at all. The only trouble, if you look at their studies, they use different age groups. They'll have one group certainly be older and one group will be younger, and they're comparing with older with younger. You can't do that. If you're going to have a study of one group fed genetically modified food, the other not, they have to be the similar animals. And then, of course, all the studies were initially done simply for 90 days. They said, all we have to do is just study it for 90 days. But What happens at 100 days? What happens at 120 days? What happens at about 180 days after feeding these to animals? Well, Monsanto certainly has objected to any other studies because they say, we have verified these genetically modified foods are safe. But the question is, if they're safe, why are they not allowed in Europe? If they're safe, why are they not allowed in Africa? And if they're safe, why have there been studies come out recently that suggest that this is a disaster and that the animals, well, I'm going to let you go ahead, Russell, and explain what the new studies that have come out have shown about this product that is used universally in America. Almost so many of our prepared foods have either genetically modified corn or soy, and what happens to the animals that are fed these? Go right ahead, Russell.
Well, the point you made about the limiting 90 days for the study, well, usually they use a rat in these studies or mice, and that's still at a relatively young age. So they were ending the study when the animal was still young. Well, several researchers brought forth the concern that if humans are going to be eating this, they're going to be eating it for a lifetime, and we need to have chronic studies to see what will happen. Well, they Monsanto and the regulatory agencies didn't demand long-term studies. They cut them all off at 90 days. They also didn't do any multi-generational tests. What that means is feeding one generation of animal the GMO and seeing what effect it had on the next generation and the generation that followed that. None of those studies were done by these companies or insisted they be done by the regulatory agency. Tests that were done by Monsanto, in fact, they sequestered these. They did not want to release the data that it was proprietary information. And so some of the researchers got together and filed a lawsuit and forced Monsanto to release the study. And what they found is that, in fact, the Monsanto studies were finding problems as well. But what Monsanto did is they used a couple of tricks to keep this out of the public eye. Mainly, what they would do is say that if both sexes of the animal didn't have the same effect from eating the soy or the corn, then it didn't count. Well, we know that there's sex differences in a great number of toxins. Mercury mainly affects males. So we know there's this differential in toxins in the sex. Well, they just discounted that. They discounted it on the basis of age. They even found in one of their studies a chronic progressive nephropathy, which means you're chronically destroying the kidney. But they dismissed it because they said, well, this commonly occurs in very old rats of a certain species. Well, it turned out when they forced them to release the data, in fact, these animals weren't old at all. They were young, and they were developing this progressive kidney destruction at an age you didn't see any kidney destruction in the normal mouse fed an ordinary meal. So there was a lot of shenanigans going on with their studies. But unfortunately, all the regulatory agencies accepted the Monsanto studies. They didn't question them. And so they declared that, in fact, they didn't find any difference between feeding regular food and genetically modified food to animals. Therefore, they declared it safe, when actually the results of Monsanto's own research did not find that at all. Well, when we look at independent labs, and there are a number of independent labs that looked at this as well, even using that 90-day parameter, and they found, in fact, there was damage to the liver, there was damage to the cells of the kidney, and what they call BT corn, which is a pesticide-producing type corn that's most commonly used in the United States, regularly could destroy kidney cells. They found that the genetically modified potatoes damaged the lining of the GI tract, particularly the types of cells that become cancers of the colon, and it suppressed the immune system. Now, this a report that came out, a very careful study just done on the potatoes, was so damaging to Monsanto that they use their influence to try to have the editor of the Lancet in England withdraw the article charged him with accepting an article that was poor research. Well, the independent study of the research confirmed that, in fact, it was a well-done study and that the findings were indeed quite true. Well, we've been through this type of battle with Monsanto because they have enormous amounts of influence. One of the things they do, these countries in Europe, for instance, Russia recently has refused all GM food. Africa had, but what the government does is they use the power of the IMF to go to Africa, and particularly South Africa, and told them that if they don't accept the GM food, then they're going to lose out on International Monetary Fund grants. And so they were forced to accept it. So now South Africa has GM food, but the rest of Africa has refused it. And the reason that these countries are refusing, and we have something like 20 or 30 countries that's refused it, the reason they're refusing is based on this research. Now, as bad as all of this research, the fact that it's shown, and the frightening things, there's a new study that has just been released, which came out of France, one of the areas that produces independent research, completely independent. They did one of the best studies, a chronic study, in which they fed the animals the GM soy throughout a lifetime, which is about 2 years in the mouse or in the rat. And so what they did is they divided them into groups. Some of them they fed regular chow that was not genetically modified. One group they fed the GM type corn. Another group, the GM type corn that was Roundup ready, which means it's resistant to Roundup. And then they used a very low dose of Roundup itself alone in some mice just to see if it's the Roundup. Because most corn is contaminated by Roundup in this country. It has minute amounts of Roundup. In fact, they use a dose infinitely smaller than what's found in food in the United States just to make sure they weren't using a high dose. They use very low dose, well below what's accepted as safe by the Environmental Protection Agency. Now, what they found is incredibly shocking. For instance, they looked at early death in these animals, and they found that normal rats live about 2 years, and only about 20% of females will die early. The GMO-fed females, 70% of them died early. So it's a 50% greater death rate in the females dying early. The males, 30% will die early in the control animals, and 50% died in the GMO-fed animals. So that's a 20% higher number that are dying early in life. Well, this is pretty frightening. When they looked at 17-month follow-up study in which they fed the animals the lowest dose of the GM corn. They had males were dying at a rate five times higher than normal. When they looked at the females eating the GM corn for 21 months, they were dying at a rate six times higher than normal. And this is terribly frightening because you're talking about billions of people consuming this food every day for a lifetime, and now that it's exposed to pregnant women and their children and their babies, this is going to be a very long exposure. And if it holds up what we're finding in these animals, they could die at a very early age. So that's something that certainly demands attention. Now, they also looked at the induction of tumors to see what would happen. What they found is that the females develop an incredibly high incidence of breast tumors of all kinds and cancer. In fact, the tumors in the female, 90% of them were breast tumors. And unusually, these tumors were incredibly large and rapidly growing. None of the tumors developed before about 5 to 7 months, which means if you did 90-day testing, you wouldn't have detected it.
Hold that thought, Russell. Hold the thought. We'll be back in a moment. Dan and Sydney, Dr. Blaylock's pointing out that these studies done on rats basically show that certainly the males did not develop anywhere near as many tumors as the male rats as the female rats, but we're talking, you know, basically being fed for a good part of their life on genetically modified food. The male has got malignant kidney tumors. Certainly the females, a large percentage of them, have got breast tumors, and we're talking the vast majority of them did. And basically they could get it either from eating the GMO food or from the Roundup. Of course, you could just certainly just get Roundup, and it's in all of the corn. Why? Because they treat it to keep the weeds down, and the Roundup, of course, will cause a significant increase in breast tumors in women. And but of course, the thing is that you are in female rats. But you have to feed this, not 90 days, as they laid the program out initially to fail. But basically, when you start feeding them for 120 days or for a year or more, why, suddenly the large numbers of the females, and certainly a significant increase in males, developing cancers of one sort or another, pituitary cancers, predominantly in females, breast cancers. Russell, you go right ahead. I mean, these are shocking figures, and the fact that you're not reading about this in your local newspaper simply is a reflection of how effective the control is over what the American people think. Go right ahead, Russell.
Well, you know, and folks need to realize we're talking about at risk here hundreds of billions of dollars, this massive amounts of money. So they have a real powerful vested interest in keeping this quiet. But this is terrifying, that this study is showing that if you eat this corn, just the corn, was enough to produce these tumors of the breast. We spend all this money warning women about breast cancer, breast exams, mammograms, and then here we have a very common food additive and food component, corn. It's genetically modified. Over 80%, 85% is genetically modified in the United States. Now, the tumors is scary enough. Now, the question is, what happened to the male that you fed this GM corn to? Well, what happened in the males, and the reason they were dying so early, was because it was destroying their liver and their kidneys. There was a progressive destruction of both of these organs, and it had been demonstrated before that this pesticide produced by the genetic engineering can destroy liver cells and kidney cells. But this study showed that it was a tremendous increase in the destruction in these male animals, and they were dying about two or three times the rate that animals that were fed normal non-engineered corn were dying. So this is pretty scary. When the degeneration was studied in a previous study, they found that the GM feeding also produced degenerating kidneys in the animals they looked at, and it produced an inflammation in the kidneys and the liver. And that this was a chronic progressive destruction of the kidney. Well, we noticed in the United States a progressive increase in the number of progressive kidney problems, these nephropathy. In the GM-fed animals, the incidence of nephropathy was two times higher than in normal animals. The Roundup didn't seem to cause the nephropathy. It was mainly caused by the GM food. Now, the question that researchers have, now that we've just demonstrated beyond any question that this is a real finding, since we found it in numerous studies done all over the world, the question is, what is causing it? What is this genetic engineering doing? Well, we don't really know for sure, but we know that when you recombinate the genes, when you're changing genes, you're not only inserting genes that produce this pesticide substance, but it affects genes on each side of it, and this affecting dozens of genes that can increase your risk of cancer, increase risk of inflammation, and trigger destructive reactions within cells, and this may be what's happening. We know that there's a increase in the cancers in the human population, both related to the Roundup and to the GM food. Now, with the Roundup Ready seed, which are resistant to Roundup, what the farmers do is they use much higher doses of Roundup.
Hold that thought. Hold that thought. We'll be back in just a moment. This is Dr. Stan. I guess it's Dr. Russell Blaylock. He's talking about simply Roundup as itself. Now, remember they put Roundup on our crops, and of course it gets into the crops, and you can't get it off of the crops simply by washing them. But basically, of course, the Roundup itself produces all sorts of tumors and all sorts of disease and damage, and they know this sort of thing. And you get in contact with Roundup using it around your home, and of course you get any in you or on you, and you inhale it, why, of course, you're laying yourself open for all sorts of problems. Russell, before we go on, would you like to get your website out so people would know how they can get in touch with you and get your information? And then we'll get back, because this is so vitally important. The American people are being poisoned. Certainly they're being poisoned by the Roundup. They're being poisoned by the genetically modified food. And we're talking about almost all the corn in America. And believe me, that corn is in most of the products you eat. Certainly, if it is genetically modified, it's going to attack your organs, and of course, it's going to increase the incidence of cancer. They know this. The scientific studies show what happens in animals, and of course, we'll probably later on in the program tell what happens a couple of generations down the line, because of course, we can do this in animals. It would take 100 years to do it in human beings, but of course, if it's poisonous in animals, why would we think it wouldn't be poisonous in human beings? Well, Russell, you go right ahead. How can people get in touch with you, get your information, get your newsletter, and then we'll return to this very, very important subject, because America is under attack today, not from without, ladies and gentlemen, but from within. Go right ahead.
They can go to www.blaylockwellnesscenter.com. That's Blaylock, B-L-A-Y-L-O-C-K, wellness. Center.com, and you can get to the information that way. Looking at some of the important studies that were done on the connection between Roundup and cancer, there was another French study done in 2007 in which they were looking at non-Hodgkin's lymphoma, which is now the most rapidly increasing cancer in people under age 30. In that study, they found there was a 270% increase in non-Hodgkin's lymphoma in people that were exposed to Roundup, I think, at least 21 days a year. Hodgkin's lymphoma increased 220%. Now, the Swedish have also looked at this. They've a couple of studies out of Sweden looking at these herbicides and pesticides. And they found that with the herbicides, there were over a 370% increase in the lymphomas. And a separate Swedish study found a 304% increase in non-Hodgkin's lymphoma. And multiple myeloma was increased some 280%. So we're talking about some pretty scary things. Now, when you look at the amount of food that contaminated with the Roundup and has the GM food. It's estimated that the average supermarket has about 30,000 foods on their shelves that contain GMO food. It's about 80% of the foods in a supermarket generally are contaminated with GMO. Well, what scares me is that mothers, even you know, when they're pregnant, they're eating this, and it's passed through the placenta to the unborn child. And then after birth, they're given a large number of babies are fed soy formula, which is genetically modified in most cases, being that 90% of all soy is GM. And about 25% of babies in this country are fed solely on the soy formula. So they're beginning at the very beginning of life, being exposed to this, these products, which means that these things we're seeing in the mice are going to occur much earlier. We're talking about 30s and 40s, where we're going to start seeing some of this destruction of liver and kidneys, the appearance of these tumors. Now, the other thing that, we brought up initially was the transgenerational effect. And that's even more frightening because we're talking about your children and your grandchildren. They've taken it to three generations in several studies. And one of the frightening things was they found that if you fed the BT corn, by the third generation in animals, there was a high percentage of infertility. They found the same thing in cattle. They were feeding them the BT corn, and the cattle could no longer have offspring. When they stopped feeding it and fed them the regular corn, then they were able to breed.
Now, is the BT, is that the one that's Roundup ready?
Well, if BT is a pesticide substance.
Oh, all right, fine. So there are two types of then of genetically modified corn. One produces a pesticide. The other, of course, is Roundup Ready. Is that right?
Right, and it's the Roundup Ready, the dangerous thing particularly about it, as I said, is they found that the weeds that are around the crops become more resistant to Roundup. And so they have to use higher and higher doses of, or concentrations of Roundup. All of the corn that ends up in your food is contaminated by a certain concentration of the Roundup. The amount of Roundup, the concentration used in this French experiment, was one tenth billion parts per billion, which is infinitely smaller than what you're going to get at a grocery store. So these increased tumors that we're talking about and death rate from destruction of liver and kidney was at a concentration far below what's in your drinking water, which is in lakes and streams, reservoirs, which is in the food itself, because it becomes contaminated with the Roundup and not removed. So we're talking about some terrifying things that not only affects the generation that's eating them, but now we're finding out that it goes for three generations, the effects. We still haven't done long-term studies on that third generation to see what other things it's going to be doing other than the infertility. But the infertility, of course, is attractive to people who want to control the world population. They would love to have everybody eating this genetically modified food and become infertile and reduce the world population dramatically. So we're talking about some pretty scary things here. You know, just to give you an idea of other things that interrelate to this, and this is what people need to realize, is that if you have another disease, let's say you have diabetes, diabetes damages the kidney, makes your kidneys more vulnerable. So if you're diabetic and you're eating this corn or soy products, then you run the risk of having a loss of your kidneys very early in life. And they were, in the animal experience, finding some early damage to the kidneys. It was subtle in these animals. But if you add diabetes or other toxins that are known, for instance, Tylenol, acetaminophen, is a very powerful toxin to both the liver and the kidneys. So if it's a person regularly taking Tylenol, and they're eating this corn, you've got two toxins that severely damage kidneys and liver, and you could end up losing both organs. A number of the other pesticides are also liver toxins, kidney toxins, and immune toxins. So we're going to have a combined effect here. And then you have the combined effect of exposure to heavy metals like lead and mercury, and the lighter metals like aluminum. They're also toxic to liver and kidney. And so that's going to be an additive or synergistic toxicity with this GM food. We have all other kinds of industrial waste products that are in the atmosphere. When they looked at people's, they biopsied their fat, they found hundreds of these chemicals in their fat tissue, which means that it's in their brain, it's in their heart, and their other organs. And when they looked at the effect of GM foods, it had effects on the pancreas, on the liver, the kidneys, the heart, the thymus gland. A number of glands are affected by it other than the ones in the French study. So we're talking about a combined effect here that is quite profound and terrifying. And this isn't just purposely trying to scare people. I mean, as I read this stuff and I see the potentiality for the widespread damage from this and death from this, it's terrifying. We have 9 million people in the United States come into contact with known neurotoxins every day. We have 69 million families store pesticides in their garage. Well, they spill these pesticides, they form fumes, and enter the house. The concentration is sufficient to cause numerous neurologic diseases, cancer, disrupted organ function. We're talking about some serious things here. Plus, we have 1.1 billion pounds of these pesticides, herbicides, and other agrochemicals that are used annually in the United States, and 4 billion worldwide. Ends up in the atmosphere, in the lakes and streams. They did a study on Roundup and found out high levels were found in lakes and streams that were found within 500 yards of the application of Roundup. So we're seeing a large number of our sources of water, drinking water, are contaminated. The groundwater is contaminated. And the level that's being found in this drinking water is far higher than was used in this study, the French study. So it's high enough to produce some very serious problems.
Well, I think that everybody in America should ask, why do they not allow it in Europe, but we allow it here? Are they doing an experiment on the American people? Why would almost all the countries in Africa ban the use of these genetically modified foods, but it's all right to use it here in America? Are they wrong, or are they poisoning the American people? And people have to stop and understand. And in fact, right here in California, we have legislation. All it asks is that certainly on the labels here of products sold in California, that they will know that they are genetically modified. They're spending, I think, $35 to $40 million to block Proposition 37. Ladies and gentlemen, we need Proposition 37 because it points out there's something wrong with genetically modified food. And everybody out there in the audience ought to get a copy of this program. In fact, we have the original French study. It's translated into English. We make that available to anybody who wants to see it. It is terrifying. Go right ahead, Russell.
Well, it is terrifying. And Monsanto, you know, all along from the very beginning, has done everything they could to keep the public from knowing what was being found in this research. Any researcher who dared to publish articles demonstrating this, you know, I'm talking about very good research from major laboratories. They went all out to have these people fired, make them lose their jobs. They tried to have them fire the editor of Lancet magazine for daring to publish one of these early studies. I mean, it shows you that they don't want you to know. Now, this is what Proposition 37 about. All it's asking is that I have the right to look on the label of my food and know whether or not it contains genetically modified food component. Well, that's the person's right. But there's a reason they don't want you to know that, because as more research comes out and it becomes more evident, then people are going to say, well, I can't tell whether or not there's genetically modified food in there or not. And they don't want you to. And they even admitted, they said, well, if people know that it has genetically modified food, they won't eat it.
And, of course, one of the arguments against Proposition 37 is we need more research. What we ought to do is maybe have a lot more research to find if there's anything wrong with genetically modified food. But there have been no studies to date. This is what is said in my local newspaper. No studies to date that there's any problem. What we need, though, is if you want to know, we could do more research. Ladies and gentlemen, the research is there. And you're not going to hear about it because they're poisoning the American people. Go right ahead.
There's a tremendous amount of research, and it's out of top laboratories all over the world. This is why the Europeans have rejected it. It's not just a whim. It's based on this research. They don't hide it. It's only hidden in the United States from the American public. And this is always what they do. Anytime we find something wrong and get good research, they always scream, oh, we need more research and more research. There's no end to the research they want. That's a delaying tactic. They know that what we have so far, if it was any other product that didn't make this much money, it would be taken off the market immediately. If you found what was found in these studies that I've described so far, with anything else that was put in your food, it would disappear in the morning. But there's so much money being made. They've contaminated 85 or 80% of all the corn in this country. 95% of all the soy in this country has been destroyed by this process, in my estimation. So, you know, they stand to lose a lot of money if the public wakes up and says, I want to make the choice myself based on this. Now, you can't go by your newspaper, your magazine, because what Monsanto does is they'll pour tons of money into advertising in those publications, and then they'll feed them false research. They'll say, oh, we've studied it, and we found there's no difference whatsoever. And the regulatory agencies have made the same statement. Well, as I showed you, the regulatory agencies get their research only from Monsanto. They refuse to even look at the independent research. So Monsanto is controlling the media so they can give you the false assurance that everything's just fine and the regulatory agencies have checked it, and you can safely eat this food. Well, it's sort of like the vaccination. What I would like to do is make these people that are in Monsanto eat this stuff just like everyone else, and every day we feed it to them. I guarantee you they wouldn't eat it because they know what it'll do.
And I'm sure they do. And ladies and gentlemen, you must understand, America is under attack. I mean, basically down the line, this is going to leave our children, our grandchildren infertile. It's going to increase dramatically incidence of cancer. They know what they're doing, Sydney. They know it's going to attack the kidneys and the liver, many of these different types of genetically modified food. Basically, the studies are there. So why do they ask for more studies? Because they want to continue, in my estimation, poisoning the American people. You say nobody in their right mind would do that? Ladies and gentlemen, you're right. Nobody in their right mind would. But it's what's going on in America today. Dr. Russell Blaylock, Russell, thank you so very much for being with us this evening. A fascinating, vitally important information. I hope everybody out there in the listening audience will either go to our website and listen to this again or get a CD or a tape of it. Thanks very much for being with us. God bless.
Thank you, Sam.
Bye-bye. Okay, fine. Well, that was Dr. Russell Blaylock, and basically vitally important food for thought and food for your body. We're killing our people, ladies and gentlemen. Basically, Europe will not allow it. Africa will not allow it, except in South Africa, where they forced it upon the people. Basically, there are people who really want to kill off most of the world population. If you haven't heard my talk on population control, the covert agenda. Population control, the covert agenda, you need to get it. A lot of the same material we'll be covering, certainly in our talk next Sunday. It's Agenda 21, the covert plan. You can actually get both of those DVDs from Radio Liberty. And then, of course, I do want to mention, this is the last night we're going to mention that we're doing an all-day seminar. It's going to be next Sunday. It's going to start at 8:15. It's going to go through till 6 in the evening. We're bringing in great speakers from across the country, and you'll have an opportunity to get the documentation for so many of the things we're going to be talking about. So again, why, of course, our meeting is at the Aptos Seascape Golf Course. Tonight's the last night. We're going to have probably over 150 people there. Great turnout. We hope that if you want to come, you're going to have to let us know tonight, because tomorrow morning early, we have to tell them how many people are going to be there so they can have the lunches for us. Our telephone number is 1-800-544-8927. 1-800-544-8927. Last time you can call to put in your reservation. Then, of course, if you want to get my talk, it's called Population Control, the Population Control Agenda. You can get it up on the internet. Just type in Population Control Agenda. Put in my name or Radio Liberty. But first thing, Population Control Agenda. It's very real. A lot of people have picked up on the information that I have there. Of course, I got that from a professor over at San Jose State, a good friend, Dr. G. Gordon Edwards, who gave me the background for that, and we picked up on it. But it was his inspiration. A lot of the documentation is his. But I would point out that you certainly need to get my talk on Nundare College Genocide, on population control. But the latest talk would be Population Control, the Covert Agenda. Population Control, the Covert Agenda. It's on DVD. Ladies and gentlemen, you need to get my book, Brotherhood of Darkness. You need to understand there really are people out there who want to kill off most of the people in the world. And you say that's madness, and it really is madness. But we're up against organized evil. There are people who really are poisoning your children and intend to poison your children's children. You really need to get a copy of the talk that Russell Blaylock just gave. It will be posted on our website tomorrow, but you can certainly get the CD or the DVD, either the CD or the tape, and you need to make copies of it, and you need to circulate it far and wide. You need to reach as many people as you can on Proposition 37 and let them understand that we need to know that the food we're buying in the stores is genetically modified, because it increases tumors. It increases cancer dramatically, breast cancer. We see an explosion of breast cancer in young women, and I think that probably most of them are victims of certainly the Roundup, or certainly of the genetically modified Roundup Ready foods, or the BT foods, the pesticide foods. The studies are there, the extensive scientific studies. But, of course, you're never going to be told that, because the media is controlled. Ladies and gentlemen, please go to our website, radioliberty.com, where you can watch our DVDs, where you can certainly listen to our radio programs 24 hours a day. You can read our newsletters. And then we ask you to pray for America. We ask you to pray for revival for our leaders and our ministers. But please pray for my ministry, Radio Liberty, for our provision and protection, because we're in a spiritual battle being waged throughout the world today for the souls of men and the survival of Christian civilization. We'll be back in a moment with Barry Shamish for our next hour right here at Radio Liberty.
In a solemn prayer.
Well, this is Dr. Stan back here at Radio Liberty, coming to you from the hills overlooking beautiful and picturesque Monterey Bay and bringing you the news behind the news, the story behind the story. Hoping to convince you that reality is usually scoffed at and that illusion is usually king. But in the battle for survival of Western civilization, it's going to be reality and not illusion or delusion that's going to determine what the future will bring. And I have to remind you the views expressed are not necessarily those of the owners, management, staff, sponsors, or supporters of the station you're listening to. They happen to be my views, and for the next hour, they're going to be the views of our friend Barry Shamish. And Barry is the investigative reporter from Israel. He certainly worked over there for 30 years, investigating the corruption at every level in the Israeli government, pointing out the fact that certainly Prime Minister Rabin was assassinated by people at the highest levels of government, and many of the other total corruptions going on over there. And because Barry was getting very close to the center of the devil's heartbeat, why, of course, he was driven out of the country, threats and eventually attempts on his life. So Barry's living here in the United States. He still writes extensively. His articles are read over in Israel, but we'd like to have Barry on every week to keep us abreast of what's really going on in Israel. And, of course, Barry certainly is well aware of the fact that many people think that the Zionists control America, where he points out, of course, that Netanyahu was a member of the Council on Foreign Relations. I bet you didn't know that. And, of course, Netanyahu certainly pretends to be independent of America, but he's really doing exactly what he's told to do, because there are powerful forces behind the scenes which have nothing to do with the Jewish people and the Jewish faith, but it does have to do with the forces that dominate America and are intent upon this world government. Barry, you pick up the story and go from there.
Now, I promised that I'd do the second half of my last discussion about Sabbateanism.
You go right ahead.
Well, if you haven't heard it, I hope it's an archive. But in short, I'm going to summarize who was Shabtai Tzvi and who was Jacob Frank.
Basically, these are two original people a long time ago, but they play an important part in what's going on in Israel today. Shatovsky lived back there in the 1600s, and Jacob Frank in the 1700s. Go right ahead, Barry.
Well, that summarizes that. Just let it be that they believed in something that was anti-Judaic, a debauchery, sexual, license, is putting it mildly, became Judaism, and again with Shabtai Tzvi in 1666, June 18th, declared he was the Messiah, half the Jews of the world. Well, all I can say is I'm going to quote the favorite middle-of-the-road Jewish quote, from Iran to Mexico, thought he was the Messiah. Now, we start from that and go 100 years forward to 1759, and Jacob Frank, he was the new Shabtai Tzvi, and let us just say that he told the bishop of his diocese that he is not a Jew. He's an anti-Talmudist. He delivered all kinds of Jews to become Christians, but in fact they didn't. They stayed Sabbateans. I know that's not the greatest summary, but you need that in the background if you haven't heard part one.
Well, you need to get part one. We'll have that available through Radio Liberty. But you must understand the Sabbateans were a group of Jews who were not Jews. They were not true to the Jewish teachings. And, of course, they basically exist today. And, of course, when you see so many of the things going on today and you say, oh, well, it's the Jews. No, it's not the Jews. It's the Sabbateans. A sect within Judaism which hates the Talmud and hates the Torah and hates the Jewish religion and the Jewish people. just talking about the background of what today is known as the Labor Zionist Movement. But basically, it started in the 1600s. By the 1700s, there was a man named Jacob Franken. Jacob Franken pretended, of course, to be a pro-Catholic, but he really wasn't. He was leading a group of Jews who were certainly not Jews at all, or had a different agenda. They moved, certainly, in the mid-1700s to Frankfurt, Germany, with her other forces at that time. One of them was a man named Adam Weishaupt, who headed the Illuminati, and the other, of course, was a Mayor Rothschild, or Rothschild, of course, eventually became known as Rothschild. And, of course, working, because of Jacob Frank leading a group of Jews, was working closely to Rothschild. Why, of course, he became fabulously wealthy. And these three forces, the Illuminati, Adam Weishaupt, suddenly the Rothschilds and Jacob Frank join forces together to begin to transform the world. So you pick up the story there, Barry.
Well, that saves me some time. I have to give a lot of recognition to Rabbi Antelman, who was my friend for many, many years, and it took that long to understand this plot. So I don't blame listeners who are a little dumbstruck by it.
And the Rabbi Antelman wrote a book called To Eliminate the Opiate. To Eliminate the Opiate, you can get copies of the book on Amazon. It's a very important reading if you want to understand the part that this, not the Jewish religion, not the Jewish faith, but this small group of people working within Judaism have played, because these people are not Jews. They hate Judaism, and they're doing everything they can to disrupt it, but they're working behind the scenes today. And when we see all these terrible things happening, it is this so-called labor Zionism, not the Jewish people, are responsible for the problems. But of course, let me suggest the book To Eliminate the Opiate by Rabbi Antelman, who is a friend of Barry's. Barry, I'm going to be quiet. You go ahead and you tell the rest of the story.
Well, what it comes down to is, even before Weishaupt met Frank, he was in big trouble. The Illuminati was banned throughout Europe. It was really quite despised. And what Frank advised him to do, remember, Frank was he provided the espionage, all right? And his goal was the destruction of Jewish ethics, to be replaced by a religion. Well, it was really the exact opposite of Judaism. This is these three people, Frank, Rothschild, and Weishaupt, may not have liked each other and probably couldn't stand working for each other, but they were all determined, that they all had their own agendas. And what Frank, what he told Weishaupt is, get out of Europe. Everyone, you've been exposed. He says, you can't call yourself the Illuminati now. You've got to infiltrate an organization with lots of lodges and lots of power, and that was English Freemasonry. All right? Now, I'm without diving into what came next, because I want to go to the present time, to the second part. From there on in, all of the major advisors came from Germany, where they were not free to do their dirty work. So they went to London, or America. In the case of Rothschild, he sent agents like John Jacob Astor and Jacob Schiff from Germany to America, and they financed robber barons like Rockefeller and Morgan, who in 1922 founded the Council on Foreign Relations. Its agenda was to destroy the American Constitution, switch the nation's diplomacy to Illumism, and that's it. That's the background. Now we go into the end of this awful story. Now, in 1932, there were 250 organizations representing German Jewry. In 1933, the Nazis cut a deal with the labor Zionists. And I repeat, they threw out the religious and the right-wing Zionists.
over something called the transfer agreement. All right, now this, we'll dive a little deeper into that, but in short, the Nazis used the Jews, the labor Zionists, the Sabbateans, but nonetheless, the other Jews, the real things, the religious and the right wing, went nuts when they found out about this transfer agreement, and they were thrown out of Zionism. It was all, everything was now in the hands of labor Zionism. And I wish people would get that straight. They're the enemy of the religious and the right wing and the conservative Jews. This is labor Zionism. Now, you have to understand, we have to go back in history with this awful conspiracy of three. But from the, well, let's just say from the Frankist point of view, by then, by the way, the Frankists were known as the Illuminati. They're all lumped together, and people just don't understand. They were quite different. They may have worked together, but they also fought. Now, what, with Rothschild money and Jesuit power, look, a German Jewish apostate, his name is Moses Mendelssohn. He began something called the Enlightenment, where Jews were supposedly free, where everybody was free. Moses Mendelssohn, his entire family, became Christians, and I doubt they were Christians. They were Sabbateans. It was the Frankists and this Collet conspiracy. What the heck? They financed Napoleon. And you know what? They were pretty darn liberal at the beginning. Napoleon liberated Jews wherever he conquered land. But again, from Germany, the reform and conservative movements of Judaism, well, they were financed to dilute the faith and introduce totally foreign concepts to their congregations. And in America, west of the Mississippi, it's like 90-95% reform synagogues. They infiltrated very well. But it wasn't good enough for the Sabbateans. Those darn ornery Jews just weren't cooperating with evil. They wouldn't give up Torah morality and accept Shabtai's fee. They wouldn't do it. So a decision was made. Where and when and how, I don't know, but I sure know when the big anti-Semitism leading to Jews moving to Palestine began, and that was in the 1880s. What the Frankists or Sabbateans decided is that only those Jews practicing Sabbateanism would be permitted to live. Take that into very serious, well, let's put it this way, in the 2,000 years of European Jewish history, there were plenty of pogroms, crusades, inquisitions, by the way, aided by the Jesuits and abetted by them. But compared to what happened from the 1880s on, I mean, life was just a plain ordinary picnic. The turning point in the final war against Judaism was the founding of labor Zionism by the Sabbateans. The aim, the final aim of this movement was to establish a Sabbatean state in Israel, in the historical land of the Jews, and take over Judaism for good their way. Now, to foment this idea, life had to be made intolerable for Europe's Jews. And so intolerable that escape to Palestine would be the best option. And then the Cossack pogroms began, and you can thank, by the way, the Jesuits and their influence over the Catholic Church for the pogroms. In short, the Jesuits, thanks to the Frankists, had a way to spread communism, and they spread it worldwide. I mean, in South America, the Indians were kept in feudal communes. Now they wanted to punish the anti-papists, those who abandoned Rome, by imprisoning them behind communal bars, and boy, did they succeed. Eastern Europe was communist until very recently. Look, the deal was simple. The Jesuits provided the Cossacks, the Frankists or Sabbateans provided the communists, and of course, the Rothschilds provided the money. Now, in the 1880s, and this is essential, the timing, Vienna was not in Germany, but it was German. Whoops, I hear the music.
Go right ahead. You got a few.
Really? Music or not?
Go ahead. Yeah, I'll tell you when to cut off.
All right. Out of Vienna came, you've never heard of these writers, Nathan Birnbaum and Peretz Moleskine. These were the founding intellectual fathers of labor Zionism. They wanted a safe home for the Jews in Israel. But neither man had the charisma of another Vienna writer. That is Theodor Herzl. Herzl could rally the masses like nobody else.
And hold that thought. We'll be back in just a moment. This is Dr. Stan Barry, simply telling us how Theodor Herzl really was the man who pretty rallied many of the Jews of Europe behind the idea of a Jewish state. And it appealed to many of the Jewish people. Now we're talking about the period in the latter part of the 19th century and certainly the first part of the 20th century. But then, of course, Theodor Herzl decided that you really couldn't make this in Palestine. And so he was talking about maybe Rhodesia, someplace in British East Africa, and Herzl mysteriously dies, and then, of course,
at age 45.
Right. And somebody else comes along named Weizmann, and he, of course, then begins to lead this move towards the establishment of a Jewish homeland in Palestine. And he gets, certainly, during the Second World War, Arthur Balfour, who is, certainly, I believe, the Foreign Secretary of England, to write what came to be known as the Balfour Declaration, saying that England would look with favor upon sort of perhaps a homeland or something of the sort for the Jewish people in Palestine. And that became the basis of the Balfour Declaration, which would eventually then lead to the establishment of the Jewish homeland in Palestine. Go ahead.
Well, it certainly led to the British switching hundreds of thousands of their troops from the European front to the Middle East. Troops that were needed to win the war, the British in 1917 took great pains to capture Palestine from the Turks and to appoint their leaders, their Sabbatean leaders within Palestine. Now, understand, during the war, Weizmann and Balfour sat down with what was the big problem of the day, but it's not the way. Well, I'll tell you what the big problem was. There were lots of people in Palestine, most of whom were religious Jews. They were the majority in major centers like Jerusalem and Sfat and Tiberias. Look, I'm not going to go into the myth of an ancient indigenous Palestinian Arab population. That is belied by numerous reports from tourists as important as Mark Twain and Balzac, who accurately noted the paucity of Arabs in the land during the 19th century. Later, after 1917, when the British took Palestine from the Turks, you had a new enterprise that promised jobs and thousands of Arabs from afar. As far away as Iraq, moved to Palestine. Palestine, the fact is, the real problem was the real estate was owned by religious Jews. Now, to neutralize the religious Jews, that's who they were concentrating on. Look, they've been living there since antiquity. Balfour and Weizmann. Well, first of all, Weizmann was made head of the effective Jewish government of Palestine. The Jewish Agency, it's called. He was made head of that, and they appointed Rabbi Avraham Cook to be the chief rabbi of Israel. Look, Cook stripped the landed Orthodox Jews of their real estate and their political rights. They did not like the religious Jews at all.
And I think this is really what's so important for our listeners to understand, is that this element within Judaism that doesn't like the religious Jews, those who believe in certainly the teachings of the Torah and the traditional Jewish beliefs. There is this tremendous antagonism towards them. It was there, certainly, in the period immediately following World War I, and it is still present in Israel today. Go right ahead, Barry.
Oh, is it present? The Orthodox don't accept Zionism, period. And as for the non-Orthodox, what is being done to the Orthodox on the West Bank with bulldozers and removals and whatever else. Obviously, they don't like the religious very much either.
Well, Israel is a state in conflict today, and it's an internal conflict. And until you understand there are two branches, the vast majority of the people are Jews, are certainly either, well, about half of them are religious, but most of them are not, are certainly affiliated with the labor Zionism. They're affiliated with Zionism. They believe in the Israeli state. That's why they're there. As Jews all over the world are being drawn back to Israel at this time. But they're not labor Zionists. They're not part of this Sabbatean Joseph Frank conspiracy we're talking about. We'll be back in just a moment.
Jacob Frank.
The storm clouds gather.
Dan, and suddenly Barry was pointing out that following World War One, why most of the German Jews were certainly not Zionists. In other words, they certainly were not interested in going to Israel. But of course, as things grew worse and worse in Europe and the rise of the Nazi movement, it became very obvious that it wasn't going to be safe in Germany for Jews. And so the Jews wanted to leave. They wanted to come to America, but they weren't allowed to come to America. They wanted to go to other countries. And they were effectively blocked in going to other countries. There was a coordinated effort by the labor Zionists to block a Jewish emigration to other countries. And the only place that they could go if they wanted to survive the and did not want to stay in Germany and face the horror of Nazism was to go to Israel. And that's what it was all about. The labor Zionists were trying to force the Jews to go to Israel, and they did force many of them to go. Pick up the story, Barry.
Well, look, if you want more confirmation of the conspiracy between the labor Zionists and Hitler, you have to read the transfer agreement by Edwin Black. All right, or to get a good idea, well, read Perfidy by Ben Hecht, or The Scared and the Doomed by Jacob Nuremberger. Believe me, all of these have been effectively blocked out of Jewish history, the same way that Shabtai Tzvi and Jacob Frank. Jews don't know who they are. They were the most influential of, they were the most influential Jews of the 17th and 18th century. They were wiped out of the history. But there are Jews who found out what was going on. Now, the deal worked like this. The German Jews had no choice but to go to labor Zionism camps, their camps, and be thoroughly indoctrinated into Bolshevism. And then, with British approval, transferred to Palestine. Now, in 1939, just before the war broke out, the British issued, the British banned further Jewish immigration. But the labor Zionists got what they wanted. They got the 80,000 German Jews who would be the basis of their Sabbatean state. Jews who were doctors, lawyers, professors, teachers, they were now going to be farmers the way they were indoctrinated to in Germany. Now, you have to understand, labor Zionism knew a Holocaust was coming. Now, we know that because of a speech given by Chaim Weizmann. I may be wrong about the, it was about 1936, I believe it was in Basel or Prague. Nonetheless, the World Zionist Conference had a big meeting without the religious and without the right wing. And Chaim Weizmann, who was the head of the Jewish Agency in Jerusalem now, said, "There will be many lost in the upcoming Holocaust." He used the word Holocaust. "We may only have 2 million, but they will be strong and good for Israel. The rest will be buried in the ash pit of history." Go onto Google and look it up. Chaim Weizmann and, ash pit of history should do it. They're going to be dust. They knew a Holocaust was coming. They knew what they were getting into when they started this negotiation with the Nazis that led to the transfer agreement. But they didn't care because they got, the labor Zionists got the Jews they wanted. They let millions of religious Jews and other non-Sabbatean Jews perish in Europe without any struggle for their survival. Now, understand, not all the Jews fell for this. There was quite a noble alternative Zionism. It was led by Zev Jabotinsky, and he was, he demanded free passage to Palestine. He demanded a worldwide economic boycott of the Nazi regime. He demanded a Jewish army to defend themselves, all of this. And what happened in 1941, he just died a strange death in New York, leave it at that. And by the way, Ben Hecht, who wrote Perfidy, he was run over by a truck while standing on a Manhattan sidewalk. They treated Jews who didn't go along with them viciously. they murdered.
I'm sure they did. Barry, before we go on, I want you to tell our listeners how they can get in touch with you. They can get your books and how they can get to your PayPal button. But how can they get to your website, get your books, your information? And then I want to get back to this because it's vitally important. Most people, in fact, I'm sure most Jews, really don't know the history that you're giving now. As how this one group, the Labor Zionists, of course, wanted to establish this Jewish state, but not a religious Jewish state. They wanted to establish a Jewish state with people who would go along with their view of God rather than, of course, the traditional Jewish. Go ahead.
Again, if debauchery is their view of God, that's what... It was complete immorality. It was not Jewish in any respect whatsoever. It was the opposite of Judaism. That's who founded Israel. There was no opposition. They killed them all off. All right. Look, for my books, and then we'll get back to this. I know many listeners didn't hear the first part, and frankly, I like to do them where there's an association made between part one and part two, but this part is modern history, and if you don't know this, you don't even know what's going on in the Middle East or who the forces are behind the mess there right now. But my books, you want to get Shabtai Tzvi, Labor Zionism, and the Holocaust. That's at lulu.com, www.lulu.com. When you get there, you'll see a search box. Write in my name, Shamish, Chamish. You will get the black and white version. Color is just way too expensive. Or download it for a few bucks. And that's the story we're telling tonight. My website is barrychamish.com. It's up and running. Tom Mack is doing a good job, so the latest articles are up there. And there is a PayPal button. And, well, if you donate, I am really a very grateful writer to you. Now, let's get back to this story. What you've got, well, you have to look, why didn't America intervene? Why didn't they bomb the railroad tracks, stop communication, stop the killing, even diplomatically? Why didn't America use its influence to stop the massacre of practically every Jew who was unfortunate enough to be occupied by the Nazis?
And of course, basically, we're talking about the rail lines to Auschwitz, and some people even wanted them to bomb Auschwitz, hoping that out of the chaos, some of the Jews would escape, or at least they might escape with their lives, because if they stayed there, they would be sure to be killed. And basically, the leaders of America specifically refused to bomb the rail lines leading to Auschwitz so that they could continue taking the Jews there so they could kill them. Go right ahead.
And you know, the Jews, after the Holocaust, loved FDR. He thought they recalled him, and they voted FDR's party and his thinking, and I don't know what the hell is wrong with my people, okay? Straight out. But nonetheless, I'm going to quote someone named Jerry Rabo. He wrote a book, a very conventional book, on Shabtai Tzvi. Here is a quote from him. Frankist families, both those living as Christians and those living as Jews, try to marry only among themselves. In the summers, the German groups regularly held secret meetings in the resort of Carlsbad. It is said by the middle of the 19th century, the majority of the lawyers in Prague and Warsaw were from Frankist families. United States Supreme Court Justice Felix Frankfurter is reported to have received a copy of Ava Frank's portrait from his mother, a descendant of the Prague Frankist family. Now that's Jewish history in a that's very conventional Jewish history, all right? Then we turn to Antelman, who took it from there. And by the way, even the conventional history is shocking that it's all been wiped out. Ask any Jew who Jacob Frank was. Good luck. Now, I'm going to give you a quote from Felix Frankfurter, who had Jacob Frank's wife's portrait in his office. Quote, "The real rulers in Washington are invisible and exercise their power from behind the scenes." That's from Justice Felix Frankfurter. Look, the difference between the conventional writers like Rabo and Rabbi Antelman is, well, the latter, Antelman, proves that literally all of FDR's court Jews were German-descended Sabbateans, determined to purge Jewry of its unnecessary non-Sabbatean, well, to kill Jews. All right, to kill Jews. Look, here's a short list of FDR's leaders, members who were close to FDR. We start with Louis Brandeis. Again, received his education in Germany as usual. Let's go on from there. Henry Morgenthau Jr., Stephen Wise, he was head of the Reform Synagogue of America, and he was totally co-opted. Bernard Baruch, Judah Magnus, Felix Warburg, they were all German Jews. All of them either born in Germany or descended from German Jews. Now, I'm going to give you a quote from this Frankis family. It came from James Paul Warburg on February 7th. I'm a little congested. You can hear my voice, I think. He made a statement to the United States Senate in 1950. Here's the statement. "We shall have world government whether or not we like it. The only question is whether world government will be achieved by conquest or consent." Now, who was this James Warburg? Well, he was the son of Paul Warburg, the nephew of Felix Warburg, and the nephew of Jacob Schiff. Well, they were from Kuhn Loben Company. They poured millions into the Russian Revolution through, now again, James's brother, Max, was the banker to the German government. They funneled money to the communist revolutionaries and upset the country. He's telling the Senate, you better play along because you're going to get it, whether you like it or not. You're getting a world government. That was one of the rare moments when one of these guys opened their mouth and told what they're really up to.
World government by conquest or consent. Go ahead.
Now look, what comes next is World War II ended, and Chaim Weizmann was wrong. There weren't 2 million Jews who would eventually go to Israel because they were dead. What he got was the ash pit, not living human beings. The Nazis, they were just too good at murdering. Barely 100,000 survived wherever they conquered. That's all. All the rest were killed, millions and millions of them, in the cruelest, most sadistic ways possible. But you have a problem. This was a big setback. There weren't enough Jews in Israel to stave off the number one threat to the Frankish state. That was the Arabs. Now, without mincing words, all right, these savage tribes threatened the whole enterprise. And the only way they could protect it was, well, make sure that there were lots of Jewish soldiers to stave them off. Without diving into all the details, and I know there's one book that does describe it. The European controlled Arab dictators, remember, they were under British or French, they were European controlled. They were persuaded to go against their national interests. They were persuaded to stir up bloody anti-Semitism and get the Sephardic Jews to Israel. Now, there were lots of ways. There were plenty of bribes, like stealing the Jews' assets. But, understand, before the Sabbateans introduced it, there was no such thing as Jewish self-hatred. Now it's just running rampant. But, oops, I hear the music.
Well, basically, it's important people understand that there is this other branch of Judaism there. And, of course, the Sephardic Jews were those in North Africa. They were in Yemen. They were certainly in the countries of North Africa. And those then were to be brought to Israel to actually... So there would be enough Jews there. And unfortunately, though, a lot of these Jews were very deeply religious. And that's the last thing the Sabbateans wanted. We'll be back in just a moment here. There's so much to this story. Remember, you can read a lot about it, certainly, in the Rabbi Andelman's book,
To Eliminate the Opiate.
Eliminate the Opiate. We'll be back in a moment here to wrap up the program. Well, this is Dr. Stan, and certainly a very is coming from a typical Jewish point of view. He cannot believe that God would have allowed the Holocaust, that God would have allowed the terrible things to happen to the Jewish people that have. And yet I believe God has brought the Jews to the Holy Land at this time in history. I think we're living in truly prophetic times. And you can't understand much of what's going on today unless, of course, you read my book, Brotherhood of Darkness, hear my talk on the dark secret, the forbidden secret, and understand that we are basically, we are seeing the unfolding of ancient prophecies that are taking place today. You need to read the scriptures. You need to understand and analyze what's going on. There is a move towards a one world government. And of course, with that, the destruction of Christianity. And with that, the implementation of a world ruler. But what most people don't understand is that that world ruler will be the Antichrist. We're involved in a spiritual battle today. And most people look upon it as a political or ideological battle. But it is a spiritual battle. Well, this is the time when I have to remind you, of course, that this will be the last time we will announce we're having a conference this coming Sunday there at the Aptos Seascape Golf Course. We have to tell them tomorrow morning how many people are coming. We look like we're going to have well over 150 for the conference. We're bringing in speakers from across America. So if you're interested in coming, you're going to have to call our 800 number right now. Otherwise, why, we're going to be closing the meeting as of tomorrow. Our telephone number, 1-800-544-8927. 1-800-544-8927. And if you're thinking about coming, fine. If you'd like to get the book, Brotherhood of Darkness, if you'd like to hear my talk on the dark secret, the forbidden secret, it's vitally important that you understand how this all fits together and how prophecy is certainly being enacted today. We have a wonderful book by our friend Ted Flynn that told The Hope of the Wicked. The Hope of the Wicked. We recommend that book. And certainly we hope that you go to our website, RadioLiberty.com. You'll listen to our radio programs there, and they're archived for 6 weeks. You'll watch our DVDs posted there, that you will actually read our newsletters, and certainly they will give you so much of the information that you will not get elsewhere. But behind everything, the powerful spiritual forces which have been here since the inception of mankind. And of course, we're seeing the fulfillment of prophecy today. Well, ladies and gentlemen, if you have not yet heard my talk on Agenda 21, The Covert Plan, I hope you'll want to get that DVD, and there's an excellent syllabus with it. We have another talk called Population Control, The Covert Agenda. And ladies and gentlemen, they've already killed about 4 billion people. Let me repeat that. They've either killed or prevented the birth of about 4 billion people. They're killing millions of people every day, and they intend to kill billions more. This is not imaginary. It's very real, and they're doing it by a number of means, and that's what the talk is all about. It's so difficult for people to believe this could be going on until perhaps you've gone to Elberton, Georgia, and see the Georgia Guidestones there, erected by a secret society that calls for maintaining humanity at 500 million in constant balance with nature. You go to my website, you can see the pictures. I've been there on a number of occasions. That's the Georgia Guidestones in Elberton, Georgia, that calls for maintaining humanity at 500 million in constant balance with nature. If you need to get my treatise, you can get it off the internet. Simply, I'll go to your search engine and type in Population Control Agenda. Population Control Agenda, you can pull it down there for nothing. You go to our website, RadioLiberty.com. That's RadioLiberty.com, and pull it down. But pull it down and read it. Think about it. Read it through again. Understand we're dealing with organized evil on a scale that is very difficult for people to believe. And then we ask you, of course, to pray for America, to pray for revival, to pray for Alex and Joyce and certainly Pastor Hutchings and for John Leffler and all the other people on the front lines of the battle. Our number 1-800-544-8927. Until tomorrow, may the Lord be with you. Oh,
You're tuned to the Global Star Radio Network. Thanks for listening.
Ladies and gentlemen, to the Power Hour Radio Show. It is the 15th of October. You're in the right place. That is, if you think outside the proverbial box and or cage. That is, if you are a little bit above person in intellect and you can see right through what's being said on the news. If you are fed up with hearing about the embassy or consulate in Libya, which didn't even exist in Benghazi at the time, and you're realizing the people have been had over this story, well, welcome to the Power Hour. That's what we're all about here today. That's what we're all about every day, trying to figure out what the heck is going on. And to help us do that, in the second hour, we're going to be hearing from a favorite of ours, Dave Krieger, to talk about the mortgage foreclosure fraud industry. That's right. It is all about fraud in foreclosure.